Well, I'm at Hey, I'm at Aleph, about a bit less than halfway down the Yom of the line begins Chinitna. We learned yesterday about the relationship between between Nedarim and Hekdesh. We talked about the idea that somebody declares something also as a, with a neder as if it was Hekdesh. Then, to what extent we talked about is that still in effect if he gives a tamer matana, or maybe only if he invites him for it for a meal, etc. So now, related to that, Rabbi asked Rabbi Nachman, yesh me'ilu b'koinamos oloi. If somebody declares that something is osur out of koinam, where we said that koinam is another word for carbon, then is there a concept of me'ila with that? If a person were then, to, if a person makes something osur to himself for the koinam, later on he has an offer from it, do we say it's as if he committed me'ila against Hekdesh, and therefore he's chayiv in a carbon, we actually, he'd be chayiv a carbon for it. The Ran only mentions over here the carbon, by the way. Usually with Me'ila, we've talked about in the past, is really there's two things. You have to pay Hekdesh for the value of what you use, you have to pay an extra 25%, and you have to bring a carbon. Here, the Ran only talks about the carbon, and they say the reason is because here, I mean, the fact of the matter is the thing didn't belong to Hekdesh. He didn't say that this loaf of bread is Hekdesh. He just said it's osur as if it was Hekdesh. It's koinam ke Hekdesh or whatever. So maybe now it's okay. You can't say if you used it that you actually took away the value of a loaf of bread from Hekdesh. So you can't say that you should have to pay Hekdesh the value of it, but you may still have to bring the carbon. Or maybe not.
Hekdesh, maybe not.
Yeah.
But still, what kind of salt and vessel is this? You just compare it to the Hekdesh. You're not making things Hekdesh.
But we see that there's a certain relation. When you're not even saying, even if you don't say the word, the Sakadaita is because you're saying the word koinam. Forget about kehektis. You're saying koinam. The word koinam is another word for carbon. Effectively, what you're saying is this thing is also to me, like is also to me or to everybody. Actually, we talked about before, actually, and we're going to talk about now. As well, that there's a we talked about in the previous parak, that there's a difference between whether you're making something also just to some people or to everybody. If you make it also to some people, you're right. That's what the Gemara is going to establish over here. That's not really in any way like Hekdesh. But if you say this kicker, this loaf of bread is koinam to everyone.
My loaf of bread is
a koinam to everybody. Well, that's effectively declaring it a carbon, because that's koinam is a substitute word for carbon.
But we're not bringing it.
So maybe you'd be high of a carbon.
Are you bringing it to the Mikdash? You want to donate?
No, you don't actually donate it to the Mikdash, but it becomes offered to you, and therefore maybe. So that's what I'm saying. So it's not really the property of Hekdesh. It's not real Hekdesh, but maybe it is Hekdesh to the extent that you have to bring carbon. Amalei and Rav Nachman tells him Tini Sura. In fact, we see in our Mishnah Makom Shenoit Nolei. We talked about in the Mishnah that, in a place, as far as Hashavas Aveda, that if it's a place where you get Schar for it, where you're being paid for your time off work, Kipral Hana LeHekdesh. Then that Hana, that amount, that payment has to go to Hekdesh. We talked about all the pros and cons yesterday of how exactly in what scenarios it would have to go to Hekdesh versus in what scenarios it wouldn't be paid out at all, whatever. Lememra, which goes to show ki hektish, that a matter of koinam, a matter of isu like that, is just like hektish. Ma hektish yesh be me'ila, a koinamit yesh be me'ila. So yes, just as the concept of me'ila applies to hektish, so also it applies to a koinam. In fact, the Gemara says ketanoi. Actually, this is a machlokes tanoi. A braita says koinam kikazu hektish. If somebody says a koinam that this loaf of bread is hektish, which means not that he's saying it's actual Hekdesh, as in I'm going to go bring it to the treasury of the Beit Mikdash, but it's Hekdesh. I'm comparing it to Hekdesh, just like Hekdesh is also so this is also. That's what the Ran says, Hekdesh, yeah. Yeah.
What does it mean, Hekdesh?
Because if he said it's actual Hekdesh, so the thing is like this. So the Ran says that we have to be talking about that he's saying Hekdesh. Because otherwise, what's the Chiddush? Otherwise, of course, if you say that a loaf of bread is Hekdesh and you eat it, then you've committed Me'ila. That's Me'ila 101. And nothing to talk about. So, in fact, the Rosh says that you're right. The Rosh says, as a matter of fact, maybe this part of the Braisa is talking about actual Hekdesh, and it's only mentioning it as an introduction to the next part. And it's very common, you know, that a Mishnah or a Braisa will tell us a din that is Pasha, and then from that we go on to a related din which isn't so Pasha. So it could be that, so the Rosh says that actually, yes, it does mean, and that he said it's actual Hekdish. Okay. But according to the Rana, it means that he said it's Kehekdish. Anyway, if he or his friend eats it, then he committed Meila. Lefichach, now because of that, because the concept of Meila applies, because it is considered full-fledged Hekdish, Lefichach yesh lapidyayin. Therefore, there is such a thing as pidyon. Namely, you can redeem it, as we talked about in the previous parak in connection with a person declared a tree to be hekdish until it's chopped down. And we said that you're able to be poyded. Similarly over here, you said that this kicker is hekdish, then you're able, then there's a concept of pidyon. A person can go pay hekdish the value of it. And then that pidyon becomes hektish. Actually, doesn't mean that when you poide it, that the object then becomes mutter? Or maybe is it that the pidyon becomes hektish, but the object still stays also because the nether after all is still in effect? That's one question. Okay. On the other hand, kikozu alayla.
If someone gives
the hektish, there's no question. You can be poided, and then yes. But here where he said it's light hektish, again, according to the Ran, we're talking about it's light hektish, so it's not really hektish. So then you'd have the question then, well, if you poide it, according to Tosfos, not Tosfos, the Rosh, who says that it's just an introduction to the next part, the first part really is talking about plain old hektish, well, then of course you can be poided like any other hektish. And if you put it, then the pidyon, the money that you redeemed it with, becomes hektish, and the local bread becomes cholin. On the other hand, kikozu alayla hektish, but if he says, this kicker is also to me as hektish, va'achla, and he eats it, hu mal, so he has committed meila, chaver le mal. On the other hand, if his friend eats it, then he didn't do meila because his friend wasn't also in it. It was only also to the person who made the neder, or however exactly the neder was made. The point is that the neder was only chal on some on one person or a group of people or whatever, not everybody. Whoever it was. I mean, the Baal neder could have just as well, I mean, with the scenario we have over here, is he saying the kicker is also to me? He could have just as well said the kicker is also to you. But the point is, then if that person eats it, he's committed, well, actually, if that person eats it, we're going to get to in a minute. Actually, relax. Actually, that we're going to get to in a minute. But whatever. So the simpler case is, he says it's also to me. So if he eats it, he's committed meila. His friend eats it, he hasn't, because it was never also to the friend in the first place. Lefichach, ein lapidyon. Therefore, there's no pidyon for it. Given that it's only also to some people, given that somebody is able to eat it without committing meila, namely the friend or anybody else, then therefore it's not considered a strong enough kind of hektish that the pidyon of it should the kedusha of it should be transferable to the pidyon.
Because just one of them ate?
No, because hektish is something which is also to everybody. And the hektish, which is also to everybody, is a strong enough kind of hektish that then the din of pidyon applies there. When it's a weaker kind of hektish like this, where it's only also to some people, it's not strong enough really to be tofus, to grab a hold of, that the money that you're exchanging for it should be invested with that kedusha, with that issue. Digger of Meir, that's what a Meir said. The Chachamim say, either way, you have not committed Me'ilah. Lefisha ain't Me'ilah, but Koinamis, because there's no such thing as Me'ilah when it comes to a Koinam. They disagree with this whole, so you see over here, when Rava was asking Rav Nachman, is there Me'ilah in a Koinam or not? It depends on the Smachloikas, Rav Meir and the Chachamim. So what's actually the halacha?
So what's the chiddush of Rav Nachman asking?
No, it wasn't Rava asked Rav Nachman. The Amoraim are not necessarily expected to know all the Braises. The Amoraim are expected to know all the Mishnayim. They don't necessarily have to know all the braises. So he asked him, and Rav Nachman explained based on our Mishnah that yes, there is Mi'ila in a Koinam. Then we find out, actually, you know what, there is a braisa that seems to disagree with the Mishnah. The braisa seems to be saying that our Mishnah is only according to Rav Meir, whereas the Chachamim would disagree. So what's in fact the halacha? So the Ran writes that given that we had Rav Nachman explaining our Mishnah as saying yes, Mi'ila b'Koinam, but even though usually we say Yachid v'Rab Malacha Kerabim, so to Meir against the Chachamim, usually the Halacha should be like the Chachamim. Here, where we have a Stam Mishnah like this, and Rav Nachman used it as his proof, then that should mean the Halacha is like that.
Against
the Chachamim. Especially because the Ran points out that actually in Masechta Shavuot, it also brings this discussion, and there the Gemara points out that it may be the other way around. It may be that Rav Meir is the one who holds the Norm Me'ilah, and the Chachamim holds that there is.
So therefore,
in Shavuot, but I mean, it's the same bright that we're talking about. The Gemara discusses over there whether the opinions should be flipped around. Well, if the opinions are flipped around, all the more so, there would be a reason to say that there is Me'ila in a Konam, because then it would be according to the Chachamim. So the Rambam, in fact, paskins that Yesh Me'ila B'Konam, if it's a Konam Klali, the kind of general Konam that's also on everybody that we're talking about. And there are Rishonim who say differently. There are Rishonim who say that no, we just go based on the surface meaning of our Gemara. We're saying over here it's Rav Meir against the Chachamim. Forget about what it says in Shavuot. Over here you find that only Rav Meir is saying there is Me'ila. The Chachamim are saying not. Therefore, they argue that maybe there's no Me'ila in Kainim.
Basically, the disagreement is how we understand the word when she says Kainim. What should we understand?
Yes. Yes, I mean it is. It does mean. Yeah, it does mean korban. Right.
But it's not the korban.
Right.
It's not the shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
so actually,
what you meant?
Yeah.
This word.
So in that connection, by the way, the Ran and the Mishnah Lamelech discuss a bunch of questions that they have. If we say Yesh Me'ila B'Kainamos, then how far do we extend that? The Ran asks, for example, over here, you have a rule with regular Me'ila. We've talked about it before. That if a person commits Me'ila with something that belongs to Hekdesh, that object actually becomes Cholin. When he uses it for his own purposes, we don't say it still retains Kedusha. We say at that point it's been transferred from the Rishus of Hekdesh to his own Rishus. At that point, he becomes Chayiv in the Keren, the Chomesh, and the Korban, or Malchus, as the case may be. Do we say the same thing over here? Do we say if the person ended up using this object that was also with a Kainam, well, does it become Cholin or not? That's one of the questions. With Hekdesh, it would become Cholin, yeah. That's the definition of how Me'ila works. Yeah, essentially. There's also the Mishnah Melech has a bunch of other questions about it that he discusses. One of them, among others, he asks, so what if you only make the Konam that you're also to eat something? Then are you also, if you have some other kind of hana with it from it, would you still say that it's an iser, that it's an iser of Me'ila? Or for that matter, even if you eat it, would you say you're only over on your neder, or would you also say that you're over on the net hektish? Because hektish would be any kind of hana, not just eating. Also, there's a bit of a discussion. If we're saying the Rambam actually paskins that given that we're comparing a konam to Me'ila, you'd only be chayiv for Me'ila if you had hana to the value of a shava prota, same as with regular Me'ila. So there's that discussion as well. What else? He asked, the Mishnah Melech asked, how about, for example, here we just talked about where we said my loaf of bread is also to everybody. What if we talked about before, a person can just as well make a konam and say your property is also to me. If he does that, that's the thing. No, you can say that your property is also to me because I'm
not to someone else.
That's the point, in other words. But if I say your property is also, if I say your property is also to me, then do we say then, are we saying then does that that considered any kind of hektish? I mean, when it comes to real hektish, you can't declare somebody else's property hektish. So maybe the same thing over here, or maybe not. The fact that you're able to declare somebody else's property koinam to you, maybe that's enough to make it considered that it's considered a species of hektish. Hektish to you, effectively. So therefore, if you were to use it, he discusses also the question b'chol. If a person is over on his koinam, does he get maybe double malchus, one for being over on his neder and one for me'ila if he does it for mezid?
But you said initially that hektish is to be forbidden to everybody.
We said that if it's not forbidden to everybody, we said there's no pidyon. Doesn't mean that they're still, it's not considered sort of a species of hektish. It's not real hektish, but it is to a certain extent hektish. He has a number of questions like that. Okay. Amalei Rav Acha Brei Derav Ivya L'Rav Ashi. What about if somebody says, Kikri Alecha, he says, my loaf of bread is also to you, V'nosna Lev Matana, and then afterwards he gives it to him as a present, which we said yesterday that giving it to him as a present, we said in the end that Rava had explained that giving it to him as a present does not take away the issur on it, even though he said, Kikri, my loaf of bread. Nevertheless, even if he gives it to him as a present, it's still considered my loaf. V'nosna Lev Matana, so then he gives it to him as a present. Mimal, who has committed Me'ila at that point? The question is, Limel Noisin, would you say that the one who's giving the thing is the one committing Me'ila? It's not also on him. He made it also on the other guy. So yes, if you have, for example, we talked about yesterday, if you're anybody other than a gizbar, a treasurer of the Beis Hamikdash, and you took, let's say, a stone or any other object of the Beis Hamikdash and took it out of the Rishus of Hekdesh into your own Rishus, at that point you've committed Me'ila. But here, the thing is not ulcer to you, it's ulcer to the other guy. So you can't say that the one who's giving it is committing me'ilah. Limo makabel, should we say that the one who's receiving it is committing me'ilah? Yachal d'omar, why? He should be able to argue back and say, why should I be chayav from me'ilah? Hatera ba'isi, isur aloy ba'isi. If I had known that it was an object of isur, I would have never wanted to receive the gift. So it's a mistake. It's a gift under mistaken premises.
Also, but why just by receiving the gift, he gets the benefit from it?
No, but okay. Okay, so the thing is like this, for example. We've had cases before, me'ilah. We've had cases where, in fact, a person commits me'ilah b'shogeg. Let's say, for example, we had an example once someplace in Ksubas, I think. It may be in Masechta Me'ilah that a person sends a shliach with a coin to the store, and then before the shliach gets there, the balabas remembers that we talked about those three possibilities who might commit me'ilah: the balabas, the shliach, or the storekeeper. But you can have a case where the balabas remembered before it actually got to the store. Then we say that when the storekeeper spends it, he's committed me'ilah, even though he had no way of knowing that it was a coin of hekdesh. So yes, you can commit me'ilah, but you can commit me'ilah by mistake without knowing. The difference is over here. The Ran says the fact is you didn't yet spend it. In that example over there, the storekeeper doesn't commit me'ilah when he receives the coin. He commits me'ilah when he spends it. In this case, the guy who the loaf of bread is also to is the one receiving it. At that point, you can't argue that he's committed me'ilah yet, because it's one thing, fine. If he knew that it was hektish, that's different. That he's receiving something of hektish, which he shouldn't. But he didn't know that. He didn't, and therefore at that point, he intends to be zloicha in something of hektish, and by doing that, he's taking it out of the rishos of hektish. Here, he doesn't know yet, so he's not doing anything with it.
Knowledge of it, you said we can be done with shogeg.
That's the thing. There's a difference between receiving it, between receiving it and making a kinyan on it, versus spending it.
So receiving it
basically cannot be, well, it has to be, right, receiving it can't be b'shogeg because, yes, you have this argument over here, I would have never been koina it, I never would have made a kinyan on it, I never would have received it from you if I knew that it was offer. But once you spend it, spending is spending, whether you're spending is spending, whether you know it or not.
No, if you don't know about this. So
it doesn't matter. When you find out later on that this coin was a coin of Hekdesh, you at that point you're becoming chayav in a carbon me'ilah.
So you should say the same about receiving.
Because at the point of receiving, you haven't yet made a kinyan on it. You've made a kinyan, but the kinyan was a kinyan betos. The kinyan was a kinyan under mistaken premises. So therefore,
is
so
there's no talus until you know about it.
No, I don't understand. I mean, when
going to be talus if you don't know even that it's
that's the point. It's not a matter of talus then. It's a matter of call it shogeg, whatever you want to call it. The point is that you spent something that belonged to Hekdesh. You received something that belonged to Hekdesh and you spent it. Yes, it was b'shogeg, but you're high of a carbon me'ilah at that point.
Yeah, when you spend it, we agree. But for that, it should be the same when you receive it.
No, because when you receive it, it's only a matter of making a kinyan on it, and you can't make a kinyan under. You can't make a kinyan, but you can't make a zechiah. You can't be zoicha in something based on a mistake.
It belonged to Hekdesh. It didn't belong to you.
But you didn't make a kinyan, and that's the thing. You made a kinyan not knowing that belonged to Hekdesh. You never would have made a kinyan if you knew that. Therefore, that kinyan is not considered a kinyan.
Then you said it's the same about spending.
No, because spending is spending. Regardless whether at the point you're spending it, at that point you're effectively making a kinyan on it. What? So we had the scenario over there where the balabas gives it to the shliach and the shliach. Thank you. The balabas gives it to the shliach, and the shliach gives it to the chenveni, and we have the different scenarios over there, which one of them committed me'ilah.
I don't understand the difference between receiving it and spending it.
If you want, let's read the Ran inside and see what he says. The Ran, limo makabel, about 10 lines from the bottom, limo makabel, should the makabel be the one committing me'ilah, yachol d'omar, he should be able to say, hetera ba'ina, I only want to receive something of heter, isur aloy ba'ina, I don't want to receive something of isur. The Ran spells out, she'ilu hoya de'eshur shal isur, if he had known that this is an object of isur, loy hoya roitzel lizkeisva, he would not have wanted to be zoycha in it, v'nimsa z'chiyah b'tos, so it comes out that it's a z'chiyah, it's an acquisition by mistake, v'ena z'chiyah, that's not a, that's, wait, but afgav the remotzi merushos hektish epshad after the b'tarus mal. Now it is true that when somebody takes something out of the rishos of hektish, then he can be committing the ila even if it was the shogig, even because, even by the mistake. Shiny hocha, it's different over here. Shehu loy hetzia, he's not the one who took it out of the rishos of hektish. Ela chaveiro hetzia, his friend is the one who took it out of the rishos of hektish. Zeloy also, ela shkibla,
you only receive it. If he himself, according to Ron, if he himself took it out of these rishos,
then that's the point. When he takes it out of it, that's the point. In other words, when he takes this coin, if he didn't know that it belonged to Hektish, then he received it unknowingly. The difference is, when he takes it unknowingly, at that point it has not left the Rishos of Hektish yet.
When he received it,
it has not yet left the Rishos of Hektish. Hmm. When he spends it, at that point, he's removing it from the Rishos of Hektish. He doesn't know about it. Okay, I'm sorry you didn't know about it, but the fact is you removed it from the Rishos of Hektish.
When he received it,
he didn't, because to remove it from the Rishos of Hektish, there has to be a Kinyan. And his Kinyan was under a mistaken premise. And therefore, it's no Kinyan.
So if he didn't have a Kinyan when he received it, how can he have a Kinyan when he has spent it, when he...
Because you don't need a Kinyan when you're spending it. Spending is spending. You're taking it out of your own Rishos and knowingly putting it into somebody else's.
It never was in your own Rishos. If you didn't have a Kinyan to begin with.
Doesn't matter, though. The point is that now it's no longer, now you're taking it out of, you're fine, you didn't have a Kinyan on it at that point. Okay, but you still...
You paid the law.
How can you take it out of your Rishus if to begin with, it was not in your Rishus? As we said, it's been consumed.
Okay, but the fact of the matter is it's been consumed or it's been spent or whatever. It's gone out of your Rishus, whatever you want to call it, fine, but it's gone out of something that could be considered your rishus and gone into somebody else's rishus, and that's when Mi'ilah kicks in. Okay. Anyway, so here we have the question then. So again, the kicker is also to Reuben. Reuben said the kicker is also to Shimon. Now he gives it to him as a present. We can't say Reuben committed Mi'ilah because not also to Reuben. We shouldn't be able to say that Shimon committed Mi'ilah by taking it because at that point he didn't know. So which one? And you're saying that there's Mi'ilah in Koinomos, which implies there has to be Mi'ilah involved over here. Amalei. So Rav Ashi answers, Mekabel Ma'al L'Chshayotzi. You're right. You're right. I'm reading Gemara, yeah. Amalei, Mekabel Ma'al L'Chshayotzi. You're right. The one who receives it is going to commit Me'ilah only when he spends it. You're right. For the reasons that we said, neither of them committed Me'ilah at the time of the giving. But later on, when Shimon eventually eats or resells or gifts or whatever it is, the loaf of bread, at that point he'll be committing Me'ilah. Shekolam moti moi tektish l'cholin, kesavah sholcholin hu, because a person, in general, whenever a person spends money of hektish for cholin purposes, thinking that it was money of cholin, nevertheless moil. He nevertheless committed Me'ilah. That's how Me'ilah works. After that moil, for the same thing, this person will have committed Me'ilah when he spends it. Even he may not have committed Me'ilah at the time, but because he could argue, I didn't know it was also to me when I received it, but later on when he spends it or eats it or whatever, at that point he will commit Me'ilah. The Ran ends off, by the way, with an interesting question Yerushalmi asks over here. If a person makes a neder not to have hanah from a loaf of bread, is he allowed, so we know he's not allowed to eat it, obviously. We know he wouldn't be allowed to sell it or do other things. Would he be allowed to warm up his hands with it? It's a nice warm loaf of bread. Is that considered a kind of enough? So the Rishami goes through a bit of discussion over there and ends up not coming to a conclusion.
Either way, because
we don't have a conclusion, we go to Chumrah. But actually, the Ur Sameach points out, based on that we can answer one of the Mishnah Malach's questions that we had before about how much do we equate Koinomos and Hektish. One of his questions was, if you made the neder only to have an Isser Achila, then are you over on Me'ilah? From this Yerushalmi, we see, since it's talking about that you have an Isser on the bread and we're discussing the question whether you're also even to warm up your hands with it, so yes, we see that even an Isser Achila extends to an Isser Hanah as well to a certain extent, and therefore, yes, it would be considered, therefore, if the person were to eat the bread, he would, in fact, be also in Me'ilah. We don't say that Hektish is something which is also for everything, and bread is, and Isser
Achila.
No, the warming himself with the bread, we're saying, is a suffix. We're not sure. But the very fact that the Yerushalmi discusses the pros and cons of it goes to show that even when you didn't make a neder to begin with, only on chila, nevertheless, as far as hektish, it's still meaningful as a neder of hektish.
Indirectly.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, continuing, the next Mishnah is going to continue on this topic. What person is mudah hanah mechavera? He has a neder not to have hanah from somebody else. What is allowed? So far, we discussed. We said that he can pay his master shekel. He can pay off his loan according to the different possibilities that we had over there, and he can return his lost object. Now we're going to have more mitzvahs that the guy can do on his behalf. The Torah of Trumos, also this person who you're also to have hanah from can still give Truma on your behalf. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that he just goes and takes some of your produce and gives it as Truma, or does it mean that he actually gives some of his produce as Truma on behalf of yours? That's the Gemara we'll discuss later on Lamed Vav. So we'll learn that tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. But the Torah of Trumos, the Master of Ledaita, he can give his Truma and Meiser with his knowledge. So all that we're going to discuss in the Gemara, what all that means, tomorrow, yeah. He can also bring on his behalf if this person, the madir, the one who's saying I'm also an hanah to you, if he's a kohen, he's allowed to bring on behalf of the other guy. If he has to bring a korban, he can bring the birds, the pair of birds that a zav brings, or a zava. Kine literally means nest. But it's a standard expression in the Gemara. Whenever in pretty much in all cases, when a person has to bring birds as a korban, pretty much always, I think it is actually always, it's supposed to be one ola and one chatas, and it's a pair of birds, and therefore it's called a kain, a nest. So like you take like a nest of two birds and bring it to the Beis Mikdash. Ola and chatas, yeah. I mean, you can also have a voluntary bird ola. Actually, the Masechta Kinim talks about all kinds of different possible permutations where a person, well, not that talks about many different cases, but among others are cases where a person brings birds for a korban, and there's a mix-up which ones are supposed to be the olas and which ones are supposed to be the chatas. It gets to be some very, very complicated higher mathematics. Shouldn't have hanah from him.
Yeah.
Or the other way around, it could also be the Yisrael said, I'm not going to have any hanah from you. Either way, whatever the point is, that nevertheless, this Kohen can bring his korbanos on his behalf. Why is the Mishnah only listing certain kinds of korbanos? It only mentions these various kinds of brood korbanos and chatas and asham. What about the other ones? That we'll get to in the Gemara together with the Ran. So kinezovin, kinezovis, kineyodas, the pair of birds that a woman who just gave birth brings, and chataris fashon. With some of these, by the way, specifically with the yeledis, it's actually, if she's rich, actually she doesn't bring two birds. She brings one sheep and one bird. She brings a sheep as an ola and a bird as a chatas. If she's poor, then she brings two birds, one for oil and one for chatas. The usual assumption throughout Shas is most people were poor, and therefore the usual expression is kine yoldas, is a pair of birds for a yoledas. But yes, if she was rich, then it would be one animal and one bird. Also, umalamde medrash halachas agada, it's also this person who the other person is also to have anah from, is allowed to teach medrash, or halacha, or agada. There's different explanations among the mafarshim exactly what each of these terms mean. One possibility is the Rosh discusses that medrash is not only what we think of as like medrash rabba or whatever. Medrash means more like the medrash halachas, like sifra, sifri or whatever, where the chachamim darshan psukim to learn out where we derive the various halachas. Halachas then would be halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. And agados would be one possibility is agados means what we usually think of as agata. The other possibility is that, and this is how the Rosh explains it, is that it actually means dinim drabanan, that they use asmachtas, that they use psukim as asmachtas for. So halachos would be things where it's an actual halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, and there's no reference for it in the pasuk because that's the definition of halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. And agados would mean dinim that the rabbanon came up with, and they use the pasuk as a support for it. Ava lo yalam denu mikra, but he's not allowed to teach him chumah. Not just mikra actually means tanach. Ava malamadu with bonavet benoitz of mikra, but he's allowed to teach his sons and his daughters tanach. Now, why the difference? Why should there be a difference between Tanakh and everybody else? That we're going to get to in 2 days, at the bottom of Lamed Vav and the beginning of Lamed Zayin.
So the Melamde is...
So Reuven has said that Shimon is also to have any Hanah from him. Nevertheless, Reuven is allowed to teach Shimon Medrash and Halachos and Agadot and whatever, but not Tanakh. So that's the difference. The Gemara is going to talk about, and we'll learn on Lamed Zayin, that the difference is which kind of things are you able to get paid for versus which ones not. Basically, the Gemara is going to explain later on that yes, you can get paid for learning Tanakh. Therefore, that's considered a hanah. So if you teach him Tanakh, then he has to pay you, and that would be hanah. But Medrash and Halachos and Agadot, basically Torah Shabbat Peh, you're not allowed to take payment for. And therefore there's no hanah involved. Mitzvah slav lahanes nisnu. The fact that you're doing a mitzvah of Talmud Torah is not considered hanah. And therefore it's mutter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So actually, they ask an interesting question. Mefarshim asked an interesting question. We learned yesterday about the concept of prutah de Rav Yosef. The idea that when a person is taking care of an aveda, taking care of a lost object, during that time, he gains in the fact that if a poor person comes to the door, he won't have to give him tzedakah because he's oisik b'mitzvah and therefore he's potim in a mitzvah. Shouldn't we say the same thing over here? A person is busy learning, is busy teaching Torah, then he's gaining prutah de Rav Yosef. The answer is, one answer is because if he wasn't teaching at that time, he should be learning on his own. So he's not really gaining the prutah de Rav Yosef from that anyway. Let's returning to the first part of the Mishnah. We said then that the Kohen is able to bring on behalf of the Yisrael the various Korbanos. So now, we have a basic question. Now, one thing we should keep in mind with the Korbanos that it mentioned in the Mishnah...
You say Shalom Aleichem, maybe he has to interrupt.
Maybe, I don't know.
Not for Shalom Aleichem, you can interrupt.
Maybe. Okay, now one thing we have to realize in the Mishnah, the Korbanos that it described in the Mishnah, the Kinei Zovin, Kinei Zovis, Kinei Yodis, Chatoris, Vashamos, all of those have one thing in common. All of those are Korbanos that are a necessary prerequisite for somebody to be able to once again eat Kodshim. Namely, you have a person, let's say a Zov, for example, while they're Tomei, they can't eat Kodshim. They're Tomei. They have to be sent out of two machnos, etc. After they become Tahar, they count their 7 clean days. They go to the mikveh. After that, at that point they're called Mechusar Kapara. At that point, they're allowed back into most of the machnos. They're allowed back into most of the machnos. There's a Gzeira de Rabbanan we learned about way back in Sochem that they're not allowed to enter. They're not allowed to enter the Ezes Noshim. But actually, the Ezes Noshim they're allowed to. I think the Ezes Strol they're not right. The point is, once they're tahar and once they went to the mikveh, they're able to eat ma'aser sheni again. They're able to eat truma, but to eat kodshim, they need to bring their korban first. Until they bring their korban, they're called mechusar kapara. They're missing a certain essential part of their kapara. We talked about that many times. Yeah, we talked about that a lot in Psachim. Yeah, we've talked about it a lot of times here and there. Yeah. All of these, now, Kinei Zovin, Zavis, and Yoldes are all definitely, those are three of the four Mechusri Kapara. The fourth one is the Metzora. A Metzora, among his Karbanos, is a Chatas and an Asham. That's the Chatas and the Asham that we're referring to over here. We're not just talking necessarily Stam, a Chatas that a person brings for an Aveira, or an Asham that a person brings for the very Asham, Behilos, Asham, Zelos, etc., that we say every morning. We may be talking specifically about the Metzora. Wait, we're going to get to that soon. So, Iboyalahu, now, the Chacham had a question like this. A basic question. When we say that, when we bring a korban and the kohen offers it on our behalf, hani kahani shluchu didan habu or shluchu d'shmaya? Are the kohenim considered our shluchim, or are they considered the shluchim of Hashem? We had this discussion also in Yuma, in connection with the avodah of Yom Kippur. So is it that the kohen is acting as our shliach? Or is it that he's acting as a shliach of the Eivishter? L'may nafkamina, well, what's one practical difference? L'mudu hanah, our case in the Mishnah over here of the mudu hanah. Iyam at the shluchah didan havu, if you're going to say that the Kohen is the shliach of Yisrael, Homahani leva also. Well, then he's giving him anah by bringing his korban. Then it should be also. The amish shluchim d'shmaya. Whereas if you say that the kohenim are the shluchim of Hashem, the usual expression elsewhere in Shas actually is shluchim d'rachmana ninu. Then sure, then it should be allowed.
Because
then, he's not giving you anah. Then it's just a mitzvah. Mitzvah avlohanif ninu. Whereas if he's doing it as your shliach, then that's an actual anah. Now, the Ran points out of here, and so does the Ran and Tosfos both point out of here, that actually the Gemara has this discussion in a couple of other places, including we had it in Yuma. We'll also have it a few months from now in Kiddushin. And in the Gemara ends up saying, actually, the Gemara ends up answering it in a very straightforward way, that Rav Huna says it has to be that they're shluchim of Hashem. Because if they were all shluchim, ha'itochen, that it should be, that, what is it, a Yisroel can't bring his own korban, only a Kohen can bring it. How is it possible that there could be something that your shliach can do but you can't do for yourself? If there's something that your shliach can do, the whole concept of shlichus is that it's something you could do yourself. We learn the concept of shlichus from giving truma, for example. You could give truma yourself, or you can delegate it to a shliach. There's never a case where you can't do something yourself, but only a shliach can do it for you. So that itself should logically show that there's shlichus in Achmana. Now, our Gemara,
mitzvah is not for what you just mentioned. The mitzvah, whatever is involved in mitzvah, has nothing to do with anah.
No, but if you're making him a shliach and he's actually bringing the korban on your behalf, that would he's doing your shlichus. He's doing your shlichus. That itself is anah. No, but it doesn't matter. But it's still a shliach. It's still a shlichus.
Yeah. We just mentioned the mitzvah is not for.
But that's the mitzvah itself. But there's still the anah of the fact that he accomplished your shlichus.
What can you say talking about after all the
what's that got to do? I mean, we're going to discuss in a minute. Actually, the Gemara is going to discuss in a minute that certain kinds of korbanos can be brought shaloi l'daita. But at this point, we're not dealing with that. So the point is, as the Gemara in those places in Yuma and Kiddushin uses that logical point to prove that the kohenim must be the shluchim of Hashem. So why doesn't our Gemara do that? Gemara that we're going to have now a whole omud and a half that's going to go back and forth on it, and not really come to any kind of conclusion. Actually, why don't we just say that? So one answer is that our Gemara would rather try to be able to prove it from a Mishnah or a Braisa. Yes, we have Rav Huna's statement. Very nice. It's very logical. But it's a statement for Namura. A statement for Namura is weaker than something that we'd have from a Mishnah or a Braisa. That's one possibility. In a couple of other places, in those various sugyas, in Yoma and in Kiddushin, Tosfos discusses another possibility, which is, fine, the Gemara can use Rav Huna's statement to know that the Kohenim are, to a certain extent, the Shluchim of Hashem. But does that mean that they're 100% the Shluchim of Hashem? Or is there, in some angle, there also are Shliach? And that angle might be enough to cause problems as far as the Modu Hanah. So therefore, our Gemara is not satisfied, wouldn't be satisfied with Rav Huna's statement, and it's going to continue to try and prove it. Mai, so what would be the end? Tashma, Ditznan. We learn in our Mishnah, Makhru Volov Kinyan Zav in Chulah, that the Mishnah had said that he can bring on his behalf the birds for his Zav, etc. And Iyamat Shluchu Didan, if you're going to say that the Kohenim are our Shluchim, Kamahanile, well, there you go. He's giving him a Hanah. And the fact that you're saying that it's Mutter shows that they're not our Shluchim. They must be 100% Hashem's Shluchim. You might ask Mak, why? Believe Time Mech listening Makhru Volov Kobonim. Otherwise, they wouldn't be allowed to.
Because they would have
enough. Yeah. The Gemara answers back no, because if you're going to say that way, if you're going to say that, then listening makrival of korbanos, then the Mishnah shouldn't mention specific korbanos, kinyazavim, etc. The Mishnah should just say generically, he should bring on your behalf any korban. Ella, mechusri, kapara shiny. But what can you could say what's the difference? You could say, you know why the Mishnah is telling us, why the Mishnah is giving us this list is because to go back to what you were saying a second ago, Yaakov, there's a difference. It's sort of like Zachin Shaladim Shalei Befanov. When it comes to the Kobonus of a Mechusar Kapara, El Mechusar Kapara Shiny, Mechusar Kapara different, Da'omer of Yechon, Hakol Tzuchin Das, in all cases when you bring a Korban on somebody else's behalf, not talking about a Koyan, we're talking about just, you have one person, you have Reuven is Chayv in a Korban, and Shimon says, you know what, I volunteer to bring the Korban on your behalf. You always need hakol tzuchim das. You always need the das of the person who's chayiv in the korban. Chutz mechutzir kapara, except for mechutzir kapara. Back there, you can bring it even without their das. And we know this. Shari other maybe korban abanav abnoisim aktanim. A person is able to bring a korban on behalf of his young sons or daughters.
Who are mechutzir kapara?
Shenem azoyz teres azov ben gold or ben cotton. The pasuk says this is the rules of the zav, which means whether he's an older zav or a younger zav. A boy can become a zav even from right after he's born. A girl can become a zava from when she's at least 10 days old. So, you can have a child who's a Zav or a Zava, and the father is a father. You don't have to wait until they're Bar or Bat Mitzvah.
That's
the father
fine.
Can bring the Korban on them from long before that. Because based on this pasuk. So you see from that, therefore, that Mechusar and Kapara are different. So yes, our Mishnah might mean on the contrary. You know why maybe the Kayanim are considered our Shluchim. When it comes to Mechusar and Kapara, though, they're not really considered our Shluchim because they don't even need your Das. Shlichus requires Das. Here it doesn't require Das. Therefore, here they're not really acting as your Shliach. But maybe other kinds of Korbanos, maybe not. On the other hand, the Ran points out, you could also argue the other way around. You could argue, you know why the Mishnah adopted the list of these, because maybe there is a chiddush with these. Maybe the Mishnah does mean you can bring all kinds of korbanos, but the chiddush would be, let's say, for example, you have the kohen can bring on your behalf an ola. Very nice. Okay, so an ola has been brought. That doesn't change your status. Mechusar kapara, when you bring the kinei zavim or whatever, that gives you a certain hanah. You're now allowed to eat kodshim. So therefore, you could argue the other way around. You could have argued that the Kohen should dafka be allowed, should be also to bring the Mechusar Kapara, should be allowed to bring other kinds of Kapara, should be also to bring the Mechusar Kapara one. Therefore, the Mishnah would be spelling out Mechusar Kapara. So you could argue either way. You could argue you can only bring the Mechusar Kapara one because they don't need daf, but not the other ones. Or you could argue you could bring any of them, or you could argue the other way. You can bring the other one, but not the Mechusar Kapara because then he'd be giving you hana.
But the fact that you don't need his das when Cohen brings it,
No. We're not saying you don't need das. No. When the Cohen is being brought, the Cohen has to have das, and the Cohen has to have the proper things in mind. We're talking about the owner doesn't have to have
yes. But once the Cohen accomplishes this, owner will get an honor.
That's the point, though. Since it doesn't require a das in the first place, that's not considered hanah. It's not considered shlichus. It's not considered shlichus because shlichus requires das. Fine, hanah you get, but the point is that was the importance of saying before that hanah is not the fact that he can eat karbanos. The hanah is the fact that his shlichus is accomplished.
Right.
Here, there was no shlichus, no das, no shlichus.
So how long is hanah?
The fact that he's able to eat karbanos is considered an indirect hanah. That's not considered a hanah that's being caused by the mudah hanah. That's indirect. It is indirect. The same way as we said the other day that we said the other day there can be a difference. We said yesterday or the day before that there's different kinds of hanah. There's a direct hanah and there's an indirect hanah. Let's say we said in the previous Mishnah that a person the mudah hanah can pay off the other guy's debt. Of course he has a hanah afterwards that he has this off his head, but it's an indirect hanah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so the question is, if you're dashing the pasuk zoyt teretz hazav to say that it means both adults and children, well then by that logic, then by the same logic, you should say when the pasuk uses the word zoyt teretz by a woman who gave birth, maybe it should also mean that both an adult and a child. And the problem with that is, how can a child give birth? We learned in Yevamos and in Ksuvos, right, that Rabbi Bibi taught in front of Rabbi Nachman, famous Braitha, we've had it before, Shalosh Nashim Meshamshes B'moich, three kinds of women, when they have relations, use Moich, and we have at the time, Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, we had a whole discussion about it. Does it mean they can use Moich, or does it mean they must use Moich? Either way, and there's also a machlokas over there. What does it mean to use moich? Does it mean that she puts it moich in before the tashmish, and then the zera gets absorbed into the moich? Is that allowed? Maybe that's a tzatzat al matala, or maybe is that she uses it afterwards to wipe? Whatever it is, ktana umuberes minika, a ktana, a woman who's already pregnant and a woman who's nursing, ktana shemetis abba v'tamus, a ktana can or must do this because she may become pregnant and the pregnancy will kill her. We're not quoting the rest of the Braisa because it's not relevant over here, but the point is we see that a katana is not able to have children, which the Ran asks back, what about? When we discussed this the first time in Yevamos, we said that actually the Gemara said that's not necessarily. The Gemara said that the Gemara explained over there, it doesn't mean she will necessarily die. It means she might die. It is conceivable that a katana might actually survive a pregnancy. So then you can have a case of it. Yes, a katana is giving birth. And he answers, and the Ran answers because the Gemara also said over there a concept called bonim hareim kisimonim, that once a woman has children, that's the equivalent of the simonim, the usual shtei sirus, that make a woman a gdola. So by definition, if she survives the pregnancy and has children, at that point she's automatically a gdola. So yeah, there's no case where a woman has given birth and is chayiv in a korban later, and is chayiv in a korban yeledet, where she's still a katana. So
she's one or the other.
She's always going to be a gdola by definition. Therefore, so Zois Toras can't mean that. So you're telling me that Zois Toras you're darshaning to mean both adults and children, but you see it doesn't work by a yoldus, so what makes you think that it should be used for that by a zov? Yeah. The answer is, Tahi Zois Toras a yoldus. You know what? You're right. We darshan the word Zois Toras a yoldus a little bit differently. Ben Pitachas Ben Shoita. We say that it means whether the woman is normal or whether she's got mental problems. Shoita, as we talked about in Yuvamus, the various details of what that means, where she has subnormal intelligence. And the reason is Shekain Adam maybe Korban al Ishtei Shoita. A person can in fact bring a korban on behalf of his wife, even if she's a shoita. A shoita is still able to become pregnant and give birth. If she did, or she became a zava, or whatever, he's still going to have to bring a korban on her behalf. Kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda, and this goes like what Rabbi Yehuda said. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Adam may be korban asher al ishtoi. A person brings a korban of a rich person on behalf of his wife. V'chol korbanos shechayeves, as well as any other korbanos that she's chayev. Namely like this. The Ran explains like this. When you get down to it, a married woman, in effect, is not really rich. In effect, she doesn't really own anything. Normally, we talk about in Sulas that whatever she owns goes to her husband. Oh, my dear, there goes to her husband, but also whatever she owns goes either as Nixitza and Barzo, where just her husband owes her the value of it later, or Nixin Belug, where she owns the actual Kauka or whatever it is, and the husband gets the payers. Whatever it is, she doesn't really have any free Nechasim of her own. So you could argue then, in that case, any woman who gives birth, for example, is automatically an aniya, automatically a poor woman, and automatically she'll bring only the two birds, rather than the keves and the bird, as the case may be. What the Braisa is saying is that no, if the husband is rich, if the husband can afford the keves and the ben yona ter, then he brings that on her behalf. We say that he brings the carbon usher on her behalf. V'chol korbanos shechayeves, as well as any other korban that she's chayev, shekach koisev law, because this is how it's written the Ran adds one more line to the Braita over here, that if he divorces her, then at that point any korbanos that she has to bring from then on is not considered to be something that he's chayev for. Shekach koisev law, because this is how it's written in the receipt that she gives him when she collects her ksuba. V'achrayis the islich alayim in kadmas dina. There's different girsahs over here. So the Ram's girsah is slightly different than our Gemara over here. It's that when she writes the receipt to him, she writes that I'm moichel. Is basically the Ran here. Any achrayis that I had on you up until now is now taken away. In other words, the implication is that up until this point he was responsible for her korbanos. Now he isn't anymore.
After she's divorced.
So therefore, that's the point. It's called Dorish Loshen Hedyot, that we darshin from, because you would think maybe she became pregnant while she was still married, maybe she should still be on the hook for it. She was still a zava. Let's say he divorced her while she was a zava. Maybe she should be on the hook for the korbanos because she was a zava. She did become chayiv in the korbanos while they were still married. No. We learn it's called Dorish Loshen Hedyot, that we darshin the Loshen that's written in these receipts, even though it's not an official Loshen that the Chachamim set up to write. But since people write it this way, we darshin it. We learned about this in Ksubos as well. So therefore, we darshin from that at that point she's waiving any claim to that. And at that point, yes, if she herself is poor, then she can bring a korban on you. We don't say that the korban asher is still brought.
What's the relevance of Rabbi Yehuda's statement in this discussion? The relevance of it is like this.
We see from the first part, you're right. According to the Ran, Rabbi Yehuda's part is not really so relevant over here. And really, according to his Girsa also, the Braisa does not begin Rabbi Yehuda Omer either. The Braisa just begins as Stam Braisa. In the middle, you have Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Since we have a statement in it from Rabbi Yehuda, then therefore we call the whole thing by the name of Rabbi Yehuda. The first part of the Braisa is saying that a man brings a korban asher for his wife. Therefore, you see from that even though, therefore, you see from that that you go according to him rather than according to her. So by the same token, even if she's a shoita and unable to bring karbonis on her own because korban requires das, nevertheless, the husband is able to bring it on her behalf. So we see from that, we see from that what Zos Torah teaches us. Just by with a zav, where a zav can even be a child, a zav or a zava can even be a child, and the father can bring it on their behalf without das. The same thing by Yerledes. Granted, it can't be a katana, because we established a Yerledes can't be a katana, she'd be an adult. But the husband can bring it on her behalf if she has no das, namely if she's a shaita. Right, so according to the Ram, the last part about what happens after their divorce is kind of incidental. Since we're mentioning part of the Braisa, we mention the rest of it. Tosfos has a different gear, so more like what it says in Argamona, but either way it kind of amounts to the same thing. That he writes to her, Achrayis the Islich Alayim and Kan Masdana, that he writes in the get that any Achrayis that you have, or no, it's not in the get actually, in the Ksuba, that I'm accepting on myself any Achrayis that existed from beforehand. So therefore, if she was Chayiv and a Korban before they were married, then he'll bring it on her behalf after they're married, a korban zava, for example.
And that ends after the Gerushin.
But according to that Girsa, we're not mentioning Gerushin over here. We're just saying, here we're talking about only before marriage versus during the marriage, as opposed to, according to the Ram's Girsa, it's during the marriage or after the marriage. Whatever it is, the point still remains that the husband brings karbanas on his wife's behalf, even without her das. And therefore, yes, we can use the word zos todas for that purpose. So far from our Mishnah, you don't have any proof about this business of whether the Kohanim are our Shluchim or the Shluchim of Hashem, because you could argue either way. You could argue the Mishnah is telling us about these specific Korbanos, meaning he can bring only these but no other ones because they don't require das. Or you could argue the other way around, that he can bring all Korbanos, and the Chiddush is with this, even though there's the indirect Hana that afterwards you're able to eat Kachim, nevertheless he's still allowed to. So the discussion will continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Rabbi Hashem.